Hello, and welcome to the Green Book Commentaries podcast. I'm Dr. Arthur Plessa. Volume 14, Episode 24, Innate's Vestigial Organs. Doctors of Chiropractic and Student Initiates, welcome back, and thank you for joining me. I would like to begin today's episode with a few announcements. First, as many of you may know, I teach knee chest upper cervical seminars. Our technique group, Knee Chest Specific Chiropractic, will be hosting our fall conference on October 22nd and 23rd in Acworth, Georgia. Doctors and students will learn instrumentation pattern analysis, X-ray specific subluxation listing analysis, and of course, lots of hands-on knee chest upper cervical setups to master your technique. And for those who are eligible, KCSC technique certification will be offered. KCSC is focused on developing mastery level among doctors and students, where applicants must pass not only a written exam, but a hands-on practical exam. That's right. We train and expect our students to be able to deliver a successful adjustment that can be confirmed with a post-adjustment Titron scan. Those who earn their technique certification can receive discounts on future KCSC seminars, as well as save on the cost of a new Titron unit from Titronix. Early bird rates end September 30th, 2022. You can register now at www.charlottefamilychiropracticclinic.com/KCSC-seminars. As for our second announcements, the Green Book Commentaries podcast is quickly approaching our 100th episode since our first episode aired back in the summer of 2020. Since this is going to be a huge milestone, I really want to do something extra huge for all my amazing audience. As you know, I'll usually throw in a bonus episode here and there, where I'll read from older chiropractic publications that I have in my personal collection and shine some more light upon the character of BJ Palmer. Up to now, I've been sourcing material from Today's Chiropractic, which was published by Life University back when Sid Williams was president. I've received so many messages about these insightful episodes, from seasoned chiropractors all the way to new students. All have expressed their excitement about learning more about who BJ Palmer was and his contributions as the developer of chiropractic. So, before I get too far off on a tangent, allow me to release the proverbial cat among the pigeons. In my personal collection, I have about a dozen or so BJ Palmer audio lectures, which are recordings from the annual Palmer School Lyceum, as well as from BJ Palmer's radio station, WOC. So, for our 100th episode, I am going to select one of these recordings to broadcast for all of our audience to enjoy. So why tune in for this episode then if there's already some BJ Palmer audio lectures on YouTube? These recordings are not just rare, but could easily be classified as ultra rare. I've been collecting BJ Palmer material since I was a student at Life University, and have always had a desire to search for his rare content, believing that if it hadn't been destroyed over time, well, an enthusiast, such as myself, could find it. I remember spending countless hours on eBay, as well as visiting the offices of seasoned chiropractors to see what rarities I could find on the developer of chiropractic. Well, to get these ultra-rare BJ Palmer recordings, it would cost me about $1,500, a flight more than 5,000 miles to the eastern European country of Bulgaria. But that's a story for another time. So from now until episode 100, I'm going to think which recording I'll broadcast. One in particular that I love is the time BJ Palmer helped put a U.S. president in the White House by securing that person's victory in the Iowa caucus. For our technique devotees, there's another audio of BJ discussing the BJ Palmer Research Clinic and how they tested every chiropractic technique against instrumentation to scientifically prove which was the most efficient at clearing the subluxation and keeping it absent for the longest period of time. So I'll revisit these audios and consider which one would be best to introduce as our first ultra-rare BJ Palmer audio. With that, let's get into today's episode, shall we? I'm sitting in my middle school biology class. The class clown is using his sipping straw from lunch to shoot spit wads at the ceiling. My class crush just received a paper note from another guy asking her to the school's sock hop event. And as my jealous heart aches, I hear my name called by the teacher, Arthur. From your homework assignment last week, can you please stand up and explain to the class what a vestigial body part is? My hands became clammy. My forehead glistened with sweat. As I stood and answered in my prepubescent fluctuating tone, it's something God made inside of us that doesn't work anymore, and we don't need it. The teacher nodded her head in agreement and motioned for me to take my seat. As my anxiety of public speaking began to subside, I began to critically think of my response. Why would God create something that had no function, no purpose, and no value to the body? Well, if you follow creation science, then God, universal intelligence, the creator, would not do such a thing, as it violates the principle of biological organization. Stevenson writes in Volume 14 about organization. An organization is an assemblage of ideas, principles, or material, in which each part has an office to fulfill in the maintenance of the whole unit. Stevenson continues with, every tissue cell and organ has an office to fulfill as a part of the organization. Therefore, every part must render to the whole unit a necessary service. If these three statements are true, then we must logically deduce that Darwinian evolution is likely a false theory, and further deduce that intelligent design by universal intelligence is the correct theory concerning biological organization of living creatures. Evolutionary theory holds that there are six vestigial body parts. 1, the appendix. 2, wisdom teeth. 3, body hair and erector pili. 4, the coccyx. 5, male nipples. And 6, the third eyelid, or the semilunaris plica. With that, can we provide evidence of function for any of these six vestigial parts? If function is present, then it can no longer be considered vestigial and provides more evidence for chiropractic support of intelligent design. Let's briefly review each part and see if we can develop these evolutionary remnants into structures of intelligent design. In recent years, scientists have finally come to understand the function of the appendix. This small pouch acts as a reservoir for beneficial gut bacteria, similar to how the gallbladder stores bile produced by the liver. Medically, the appendix was an emergency room nightmare should an acute case of inflammation develop. To combat this, routine appendectomies were a common medical practice in the 20th century. Chiropractically, cases of appendicitis had a subluxation somewhere between the second, third, or fourth lumbar, using the Merrick system. Wisdom teeth comprise the last set of molars and are used to grind coarse and rough food. Evolutionary theory holds that ancient human ancestors ate different foods than we eat now, and as a result, have no need of these teeth in today. It is still common dental practice to have wisdom teeth removed, even if they aren't causing a problem. Chiropractically, cases of pain and inflammation around the wisdom teeth can trace a subluxation to either the third, fourth, or fifth cervical, again using the Merrick system. Body hair and erector pili. Doesn't that instantly make you think of a hairy guy in a disco outfit, staying alive to Saturday Night Fever? Evolutionary theory states that mankind's ancestors were in need of higher quantities of hair to maintain their body temperature, living in outdoor climates, using the erector pili to cause hair to stand on end, thereby trapping heat between. As man has evolved and become accustomed to indoor living, we are apparently less hairy than former generations. Chiropractically, the erector pili are innervated by the sympathetic branch of the autonomic nervous system. A subluxation at either the fourth, fifth, or sixth dorsal can cause general body heat regulation problems. The coccyx is comprised of 3 to 5 fused segments and is located directly under the sacrum. Evolutionary theory sees the coccyx as rudimentary tissue. That stems from mankind's fishy ancestors. This former tail-like structure was described by Haeckel when he observed and compared the embryonic development phases between humans and aquatic animals with gills and tails. This theory holds that the sacrum is This theory holds that the coccyx is shrinking in size as mankind continues to evolve, as we don't need a tail, being bipedal, upright walkers. Chiropractically, the coccyx is the structure which comprises 1/3 of the bones used for sitting, as well as the connection point for the phylum terminale. Subluxation at the coccyx can affect nerve transmission to the rectum, anus, urinary tract, pelvic organs, prostate gland, buttocks, and cause cord tension. Male nipples. What on earth is the purpose of these? If you were to ask Ben Stiller's character from Meet the Fockers, he would likely press his index and thumb together while pretending to milk a cat and say, "You can milk anything with nipples." Evolutionary theory states that the embryo of ancient mankind was actually sexless. So nipples were there first, and the sex was developed later on in the growth cycle. The only known function for male nipples has been determined to be for sexual stimulation. Chiropractically, a subluxation at either the second, third, or fourth dorsal can affect nerve supply to the nipples in both male and female, causing sensitivity levels to become abnormal. Plica semilunaris. This third eyelid is a fold of conjunctiva at the inner corner of the human eye. In other animals, this membrane serves to protect the eye and keep it moist. Evolutionary theory connects the plica semilunaris of humans to that of other animals based solely upon appearance. Chiropractically, this structure is innervated by the trigeminal nerve. A subluxation at either the third, fourth, or fifth cervical can interfere with nerve supply, causing dry and itchy eyes. So, with that, we have reviewed the 6 vestigial structures and hopefully have clearly demonstrated anatomical and functional properties, despite differences in location and purpose. All vestigial structures have one common factor. They either receive a direct nerve supply of innate mental impulses or protect nerves, as we have with the coccyx, Stevenson says. Stevenson says it best. Its presence in the organization normally is its justification for existence, for it to produce something or do something for the benefit of the whole. In other words, if a structure in the body exists, then it has a function. It's up to mankind to develop our understanding and catch up with innate intelligence. With that, we move into our final topic for today's episode. No interference to afferent transmission. We all know that subluxation affects nerve flow from brain to body, but what about nerve flow from body to brain? In today's reading, Stevenson will state how a subluxation only affects afferent flow. Correction. Stevenson will state how a subluxation only affects efferent flow and preserving afferent flow from interference. Well, how can this be? What about cases with paresthesia and paralysis? Wouldn't that affect the afferent nerves? This was honestly one that I had trouble wrapping my head around. I mean, how could a subluxation only cause pressure and interference and only affect to only efferent nerves and somehow selectively spare afferent ones? After recruiting the help of my friend and colleague, Dr. Scott Jackson, I believe that we might have solved this puzzle. The flow of innate mental impulses is a philosophical explanation of a metaphysical process of generating mental energy by innate intelligence. On the flip side of the same coin, the brain receives these mental impulses, transforming them into electric potential. Since innate is metaphysical, a physical subluxation cannot interfere with its ability to perceive physical problems with tissue cells affected by subluxation. Innate is right there, everywhere in the body, always knowing. To clear up any confusion, let's turn to Green Book Volume 32, which was published in 1955, nearly 30 years after Volume 14. BJ wrote, quote, "The fundamental cause of all dis-ease lies between the innate intelligence and the body, in the interference to the normal and natural quantity efferent flow between innate intelligence and the body, in the interference to the normal and natural quantity afferent flow from body to innate intelligence. This interference between can make either sick." End quote. In conclusion, philosophically, there is no interference to afferent flow. Physiologically, there is interference to afferent flow. When we return from our break, we'll begin our reading from Volume 14. Welcome back from our break. We now begin our reading from Volume 14, Chiropractic Textbook, page 177. Article 226, Sensory Nerves. Sensory nerves are afferent nerves, leading from the special sense organs to the brain. The function is sensory, and this is a conscious, educated function. Their dendrites have special construction as receptors of environmental vibrations. Most of the special senses have cranial nerves as their sensory nerves. A study of these diagrams will show that a special sense organ must always be periphery in the normal complete cycle. The special sense cycle is a special cycle concerning a subject entirely different from that of the normal, complete cycle. The impressions from the special sense organs are concerning an entirely different set of circumstances than the impressions from the same organ via the afferent side of the normal, complete cycle. That the afferent sides are both cycles, use the sensory nerve is not likely, for special sense can suffer interference and general sense cannot. The current of the general sense impressions seems to be the more intimate property of innate, as the innate brain is. The impressions from sensory organs reach innate brain in any case, whether we are asleep or awake. The educated brain is only the recording place of percepts. If this were not true, we could not be awakened by noise or any other circumstance that affects the special senses. Educated mind sleeps. Innate mind never does. Article 227, Special Sense. Special sense is the functioning of the special sense organs, namely optic organ, olfactory organ, gustatory organ, auditory organ, and the organ of feeling. Special sense is sensory function, one of the 9 primary functions. There are 5 special senses, namely sight, smell, taste, hearing, and feeling. There are several kinds of feeling, namely touch, pressure, heat, cold, and muscular. Article 228, Some Other Special Senses. The sense of equilibrium is that which enables a person to sense bodily position and balance. The sense of orientation is the sense of direction and location. There are thought to be other special senses which are very latent or rudimentary. Article 229, General Sense. General sense is information which innate receives over the afferent half of the normal complete cycle. Normally, they are the indications of normal needs of the tissue cells, such as hunger, thirst, comfort, satisfaction, pleasure, etc. They are made known educationally through the interbrain cycle. Pain, itching, and the like are educated consciousness of abnormalities in the periphery via the interbrain cycle and the normal complete cycle. Pain, itching, etc. are not special senses chiropractically. Article 230, Organization. An organization is an assemblage of ideas, principles, or material, in which each part has an office to fulfill in the maintenance of the whole unit. The human body is a very close organization with definite centralization at the brain. Every tissue cell and organ has an office to fulfill as a part of the organization. Therefore, every part must render to the whole unit a necessary service. Let us consult Webster for the definition of organize. Quote, to analyze or constitute in interdependent parts, each having a special function, act, office, or relation with respect to the whole. To systematize, to get into working order. End quote. Reference Webster. We know from this definition that an organism is the logical result of organize, or creation. An organism consists of interdependent parts. An independent part could not be a true part of the organism, but would be something not needed or wanted there, foreign material. All the parts have common needs, common supply of these needs, common interests, common mission in the universe, and common justification for existing at all. Therefore, each part has a duty to perform in the organism, a function which is for the common good of all the parts. Examination of the definition again shows us that our reasoning is correct. Quote, each having a special function, act, office, or relation with respect to the whole. End quote. These duties are not haphazard or just what the part happened to be or do. It is something the organization or organism needs, or it would not have been incorporated. Its presence in the organization normally is its justification for existence, for it is to produce something or do something for the benefit of the whole. Again, the definition bears us out. Quote, to systematize, to get into working order. End quote. Then there is a great principle that accounts for the existence of this creation, which has been created, organized, and that principle is system. Now we know by reasoning and examination of many definitions that system can be nothing less than a process of intelligence, just as selection in the signs of life is a process of intelligence. Therefore, there is intelligence throughout the organism, and each part has an amount proportional to its state of organization. Then, what is innate intelligence? Scientifically, it is the law of organization. This is by no means a view of the physicists, but is squarely in chiropractic. Thank you for joining me for another episode. I'm Dr. Arthur Plessa. This has been the Green Book Commentaries Podcast.